We've got another edition of our Road to Revenue series, and in honor of the launch of my new TV show, 2 Minute Drill, it's all about what to include in a pitch. And we're going to cover not only emotional and credibility aspects, but how to quantify and articulate the quantification of more value than you're asking for. Tweet me at David Meltzer, your favorite takeaway from today's episode, and check the description for my email and text number to find out where you can contact me at any time.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
This January comes the next hit business show, 2 Minute Drill. Four companies will have 2 minutes to pitch their business, competing for $50,000 in cash and prizes. Will they rise to the occasion or crumble under the pressure?
You want to give yourself a critique?
Crunching your way to a healthier new you.
This is a great idea. Too bad you have it.
David Meltzer hosts 2 Minute Drill, premiering Friday on Bloomberg TV.
Hey, what a perfect beginning here for our pitch, what to include in pitch, how to pitch training. 2 Minute Drill will air tonight at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time on Bloomberg TV. Check it out through Bloomberg on whatever platform you have there. And on Monday on Amazon Prime, we'll have 12 episodes. Season 2 will be in June. There's $50,000 of cash and prizes. So if you haven't tried out, make sure you email me, david@dmeltzer.com or dmeltzer.com/pitch. All of those will be in the chat. Remember, we're going to do a Q&A session about pitching here. So put your questions in the Q&A portion here. We'll try to move them over if you don't. Welcome to everyone. Next week's training is on negotiations, how to negotiate from an abundant position of more than enough. Remember, all the exercises, guides, my books, they're all included. All you got to do is reach out to me, david@dmeltzer.com. You can join my text community, 949-298-2905, to do that as well. Really looking forward to going through the pitch with you and answering the questions that you have right down there. All right, let's get started. Number one thing, how do you start a pitch? And the number one way you start your pitch is preparation. I think the number one thing that's come across, whether it's in the TV show Elevator Pitch, which I executive produce, or in 2 Minute Drill, or all the other pitch competitions or pitches that I've seen from funding different deals, is that what separates credibility is preparation. And we have a whole different way of preparing now because most of our pitches are virtual, which means we have to make sure that we are not only prepared with the content of the pitch, but we're prepared with the video, with the connectivity, with the background, whatever it may be. We want to make sure that we don't lose, but take advantage of the preparation that we can have. So utilizing different notes that you can put up there. We don't want to read a pitch, right? That loses credibility that we're not prepared, but it's okay to have notes taped up. It's so much easier to be prepared. But there is more to be prepared with when we're going virtually in a pitch. Credibility, though, number one in how to start a pitch, we want to make sure that we start out at the highest credibility of understanding what our business is, the needs are, the ask is, whatever it may be. There's a variety of ways. I love to combine credibility with emotional attachment when I start a pitch. You know, I love to tell a little bit of a story and teach a lesson and then build that into my pitch of why I've created this product, solution, or service in order to fill that story or that lesson. And those pitches can and can't start with an ask, but make sure that that ask is somewhere within the context of your pitch to see exactly where you are. Now, some great ideas in preparing. People ask me, well, how do I prepare? Practice, practice, practice. The actual pitch. Practice in a camera and watch yourself. Practice to friends, families, and associates. Practice in the mirror, old school. See yourself talking there and watch yourself. The more you practice, the better it gets. I tell a story about how as my career in speaking started to take off and I had larger and larger crowds. My 10-year-old son, Miles, asked, you know, aren't you nervous to speak in front of 70,000 people in a stadium or 20,000 people in a theater? And I asked Miles, I said, why don't you come on stage with me and clap once and tell me if you'd be nervous? He said, no, I wouldn't be nervous. I said, why? He said, because I know I can clap. It's, you know, I won't be nervous at all. I said, that's where you have to get in your pitch. It has to be like clapping. It has to be an unconscious competency that allows you to know your business inside and out with credibility. So you don't get nervous. You don't misquote or mistake things. You'll see in 2 minute drill tonight, you know, there's people that forget the name of their company. There's people who do all types of things that just illustrate that they're not prepared. And since we invest in entrepreneurs, we invest in people, we want to invest in prepared people who are confident, clear, and balanced in what they're doing, that know their business inside out and have practiced the pitch as well. Now, one other thing about preparation as you go through is that if it's not your core competency or capability to do a pitch, then find somebody, hire someone, get someone to pitch for you. You know, you may be an incredible innovator. You may be an incredible engineer. You may be an incredible design person, whatever it may be, but you may not have the capability of pitching. You're better off in the preparation, realizing that, and getting somebody to pitch for you. It's well worth the time, energy, resources, emotions, and money to get a professional to pitch for you in that preparation as well. And hopefully it's someone within your business, but even if it's someone outside, I would prefer to see a professional prepared pitch, a credible pitch that articulates that emotional attachment. And if we can start off with credibility and emotional attachment by using preparedness, you're going to be way ahead of the game. We're going to be looking for things to help, not looking for the skepticisms. I'm going to go through the biggest mistake I see in credibility. By the way, I see people overselling, back-end selling, lying, manipulating, cheating from the very start. You know, they're hiding numbers. And it's obsequious, meaning it's obvious to people. And what happens is the minute I start assuming that you're overselling, back-end selling, lying, manipulating, or cheating, I start looking for holes. I start looking at how skeptical I am at what you're doing. And we don't want to do that, right? We want to keep everything on a positive where we're giving the benefit of the doubt, not looking to see where that skepticism is in what we do. And so we want to start off at the highest level of integrity and credibility, including it could be, you know, vulnerability. When we show vulnerability, not only are we credible, and I always say to be invulnerable, you have to be vulnerable and start off in a vulnerable position, but we also get the emotional attachment. So telling those stories of how we created the company and why we created the company, utilizing vulnerability is a great way to illustrate the credibility as well as to perpetuate the emotional attachment that only increases your statistical success. You want the benefit of the doubt. You do not want someone looking for holes in what you do and looking for the negative side or the arguments against what you're doing, because not only won't they align or share your vision, but they may infect those other people around them that may have a positive perspective or see the value or share the vision in which you have. So make sure that you start off on the right foot by, number one, being prepared and understanding where in the credibility and emotional attachment you're going to hit people, and consider making your ask up front so people can put what you're saying in alignment with what you're going to be asking for. Not a necessity. That's a matter of personal choice whether to do that or not. The second thing to talk about is what makes a good pitch in the pitch. Obviously, the preparation, the backdrop that you have, using props, notes, other things effectively so that you're not reading, but you're presenting in a passionate, profitable, purposeful way, telling a story, teaching lessons, and most important, what's the purpose of the pitch? It's to articulate quantitative value that exceeds the value that you're asking for. Let me repeat that for you. The only purpose of a pitch is to articulate in a confident, clear, and balanced way the quantitative value in which that exceeds that which you're asking for. And if you're capable of doing that, I can't see any reason that someone won't want to do what you're asking to do or give you the value if they're receiving more value and you're capable of articulating and quantifying that value to them. Well, how do we do that? Well, we have to be more interested than interesting. And so when we prepare all of these different props, notes, things, we want to make sure that we cover all the most valuable reasons why someone's going to do what we ask. And we want to list those out in our preparation, and we want to try to quantify them with time, value, emotion, and go ahead and put dollar signs, if you can, into those types of explanations, articulation. And if you can list out a variety of reasons and capabilities that are quantifiable, not subjective, right? Everybody knows what subjective means. That's the loser pitches that I see, the ones that are based off of only credibility and emotional attachment, the ones that I call the Barney pitches, you know, the purple dinosaur that talks about, I love you, you love me, nobody makes any money. And I get those pitches all the time where I just adore the person who is pitching, but they're not capable of articulating a quantitative value that's exceeding what they're asking for, or not even close. They're relying on my big heart and the subjective value in which they portray because of the circumstances or the product or other things that they may be able to talk about in the beneficial way outside of quantifiable value. So make sure you're focusing in on a list of reasons and trying your best to put time, money, and resources next to those reasons so that you get comfortable articulating and adjusting and relating back to a mathematical equation that says, can you see any reason you want to move forward? The second thing we want to quantify is impact, especially today. You know, I wrote a book called Compassionate Capitalism. We want to talk about, how does this impact the environment? How does it impact our society? How does it impact education? How does it impact our health? How does it impact something that also pertains to what? That's right, quantitative value. And if we can and are capable of articulating that quantifiable value of impact, that, you know, so many millions of bottles go into the ocean every year, and because we use recyclable bottles or containers, that we're going to save 2 billion bottles, which then will result in this much savings or this much time or this many resources that will then prolong what, the credibility and emotional attachment of our children having an earth to live on, or a sustainable place to provide fresh water or air or some of these necessities that do have quantifiable value, right? If we run out of water, I can tell you it will be trillions and trillions of dollars of damage. Just the same as if we cannot stop a pandemic, I can tell you how trillions and trillions of dollars will be wasted. And we can put those things into quantifiable value, the impact it has if we don't have the proper procedures in order to protect our country from blank, or protect our air from blank, or our ocean from blank. And so we really want to get focused in on, when we're talking about how to pitch, on not only the reasons and the quantifiable value, but the impact that it has. Now, what do we use the capabilities for? Now, capabilities are not only just features and benefits, they're actually skills, knowledge of what and who, and combined with some sort of desire or emotional attachment, meaning that if we can support the quantitative analysis with features that we have or benefits that we can provide, that's how we use a capability analysis, is we tie in the features and benefits of our product, solution, or service in order to support a capabilities analysis that's quantifiable, that, you know, this will allow you to retain this many employees per year, or this increase in engagement, 10% increase in engagement will increase your productivity 10%. You're netting $100 million a year. Can you see any reason you wouldn't want to make this investment to gain $10 million a year? This is the type of analysis that goes into pitches that are successful. Someone that goes beyond the game of emotions, beyond the purple dinosaur, and into a quantitative analysis of, here's the reasons and here's the numbers behind the reasons. Here's the impact that it has and here's the numbers behind the impact. Here's the capabilities supported by the features and benefits of my product, service, or solution. And here's the quantifiable and quantitative analysis of that. Considering all of these things, can you see any reason what that you wouldn't want to move forward? Considering that I've been able to, through credibility, emotional attachment, the quantifiable analysis of reasons, impacts, and capabilities, exceed the value I'm asking for. It's all math. And if I can come to that conclusion, then I need to practice it with the proper backdrops and technology and notes and props in order to effectuate articulating that. So many people know their business. And when I have a straight conversation with them, they're capable of having a conversation and proving out a quantifiable analysis of what they're doing. But moreover, they can't present. They could not present and articulate that quantifiable value to a reasonable standard or the ability to show how it exceeds what we're doing. Now, within the context of what makes a good pitch, there's also one thing that at least 33% of the time, no matter what TV show I've been on, what pitch competition I've been involved with, or funding myself, I cannot believe how many people forget to ask. Now, I like to ask up front because I would rather people align what I'm talking about, the values that I'm talking about, with what I'm asking for. You know, if, for example, I was selling a brand new Ferrari and I told you my ask was a dollar, my pitch would have a greater success knowing that up front. It would be a lot shorter and a lot more receptive of everything I said. And the questions would be different, probably based off of where the catch is or why I would do that. Instead of at the end where we don't give someone time to put things in the context of what the ask is. But it is okay to go ahead and ask during or at the end of a pitch, but please make sure you have an ask when you pitch, whatever that ask may be. So many people forget that important component. I tell a story about on elevator pitch, one of my favorite people in the elevator, he didn't get out. And back then in season one, we used to have the contestant walk in front of us after we didn't let him out, which was really uncomfortable. But this guy just blew up at us. All four judges screaming at us, telling us how stupid we were and how we missed the boat and how he had $2 million of revenue already. And I just stopped him right there. I said, hey, man, you never made an ask, nor did you tell us about the $2 million. So make sure you quantify the value to exceed what you're asking for. In order to do that, you need to make the ask. All right. Now, we prepare correctly. We have credibility, emotional attachment, reasons, impacts, and capabilities. Now, how do we end a pitch? Remember, you're only as good as your last impression. First impressions are great, but that last impression can make all the difference. If we're able to articulate that value. So what do we do? Number one, we can go back to the opening antidote, idea, ask, you know, circle it back to what we were talking about that refreshes the memory of, hey, I'm exceeding the value that I'm asking for. Remember what I said at the beginning of the pitch. Very, very effective way of closing a pitch. Two, end with a challenge, right? People love a challenge. End with a challenge. Go ahead and ask them to find something different or better or worse or whatever it may be. But to end with a challenge will increase your statistical success of engagement, meaning that there'll be some sort of next step. It's kind of like cold calling, right? The only objective of a cold call, 80% of them don't answer, is getting the person to call you back. But yeah, most people waste their time, emotion, energy, and money trying to convince somebody on an answer machine or on an email or on a text. Ain't going to happen. Your own objective of 80% of the time should be just to get someone to respond to you. Then you can share a vision. The same thing happens here when you leave a challenge. Invite the audience to a metaphorical mission. Try to get some sort of metaphor involved that is aligned with a life mission, or like me, to empower over a billion people to be happy, and leave them with the mission to help you to utilize or know anyone to help you to utilize that metaphorical mission that you may be on to empower over a billion people to be happy, for example. Use repetition for a dramatic close. Right? Make sure people don't pick up things right away. You may have practiced this for hours and hours and days and weeks and months, but you need to make sure that you utilize repetition in order to effectuate the understanding alignment to get the full articulation. Remember what Lou Holtz said, the coach of Notre Dame. It's not what I say, it's what they hear. And sometimes in order to hear something, you need to repeat it, not just once, twice, but sometimes three, four, or five times. I always, when I'm doing speeches or pitches, like to tell you, that's why I put the ask up front. I like to to tell you what I'm looking for. And then I tell you what I'm looking for. And then I remind you what I was looking for at the end. And so for me, the repetitive nature is a crucial one in order to make sure that people hear what I say. Inspiration. That's another way of finishing. When we want to elevate people's awareness, we want to raise their frequency, and inspiration is the process of allowing them to see what you have through you, clearing the connection between you and what they have. And obviously credibility and emotional attachment play a critical role in being able to inspire people with the shared vision that you have, the articulation of the value that you had that exceeds what you're asking for. And so it's very important that you leave inspired at a high note, at an elevated awareness, in order to give yourself a higher statistical success. And in so many things, you'll see in 2 Minute Drill tonight that a lot of the pitches just inspired us. And I think when we were inspired in spirit and fired up, the judges were just putty. And it was like, I don't remember what she said, but I'm in, I bet on the jockey, whatever it may be. So don't be afraid to be inspirational, to plateau and grow, to use your higher frequency, to elevate people's awareness to their higher frequency. Another technique is make sure that you illuminate or you surface their objections. If you are well prepared, you are well prepared for what people would think or might think, or any clarifications that may be necessary, any weaknesses that you have, any incongruencies that exist. Illuminate them, elevate them, bring them to the surface and address them so that they know and get rid of any skepticism or any void shortages or obstacles that they may create that are much larger than the ones that actually exist. So when you surface an objection, when you illuminate a weakness, you're able to solve that as well, or at least acknowledge your credibility that this is something that you need their help with, or that's why we need the money, or we're going to have to figure this out together and mitigate risk of whatever that may be. But do not leave them hidden. Don't give them the exercise or the power to go searching for what's missing, because we all know when we start paying attention to what's missing, we're going to find what's missing. When we pay attention to what we don't want, we're going to find what we don't want. So we want to illuminate what is missing. We want to illuminate that for them and address it and acknowledge it and surface it. Just like when we start, you can tell a story and tell the lesson. You can tell the story at the end as well. And you can provide that lesson as long as the lesson articulates the value that exceeds what you're asking for. And so to tell a story, people love stories. Since the beginning of time, that's how we communicate, through stories. And we learn lessons through those stories. We evaluate things through those stories. We make our judgments and conditions through those stories, through credibility and emotional attachment, which are tied into those stories. So tell those stories. Next, pitfalls. Ask unusual questions. Curiosity. Sorry, not pitfalls. That'll be our last points here. Curiosity. We want to pique curiosity. We want to stimulate interest. And in order to pique curiosity, asking unusual questions. You know, when I'm doing the playbook, my podcast, I love when people say, no one's ever asked me that before. Or what a great question. In fact, on office hours, we keep track and do good points like we will on 2 Minute Drill of unusual questions, one that make people think, that aren't your standard, you know, how did it feel when you lost the Super Bowl, Tom Brady? You know, that's not what we're looking for in a pitch. We're looking for the unusual questions. We want you to have questions and you want to us to have questions. And in order to evoke those, be prepared to ask some unusual questions that evoke curiosity, and understand that it makes us think. Because once we get in the process of curiosity to be more interested than interesting, we are well on our way to creating that emotional connection and well on our way to articulating the quantitative value to exceed that which we're asking for. Now, finally, in the last few minutes, before we get to Q&A, make sure you're putting all those questions in there. Reminder to everyone, you can have the exercises, guides, and my books for free on this topic and other topics. We have negotiations, pitch, ego. We're even going to do a mommy issue training eventually. Put your questions in the Q&A. Just email me, David@dmeltzer.com. But let's talk about the pitfalls that I found in pitching. And there's three pitfalls that I have found. One is people fall under the pressure of time. There's a reason on both TV shows that I do, Elevator Pitch and 2 Minute Drill, that the clock is omnipresent. The clock is there. And there's so many different studies, if you want to look at it, so many different studies of people who can perform fine until you put a clock in front of them. And then everything goes awry, from chess to football, to all types of different games, to pitching, to speeches, to TED Talks. It's amazing what time will do to disrupt you. So you need to control time, understand the man-made construct itself through preparation and the ability to tell stories and provide lessons or articulate value. This will help you control your activity within the context of time. If you have things memorized, you're going to have a really difficult difficult activity of getting right on the clock. When you are telling stories and teaching lessons and using the reasons, impacts, and capability analysis, talking through credibility and emotional attachment, you can end when you want to end. You could tell the story in a quicker or a slower way, and the clock is actually your friend. To me, when I'm speaking, the clock is actually a security blanket, not a pressure cooker. It's a security blanket, not a pressure cooker. So make sure that you understand time in the context of how you pitch and what you pitch and the value that you're articulating to make sure that you get everything that you want in your pitch as well as your ask. Two, one of the bigger pitfalls today is because of technology is setting. You know, you got to make sure your setting is good. There's so many times I'm doing interviews and even on the TV show that we got to make sure that we have the setting correct. The lighting needs to be correct. The mic needs to be correct. Our notes need to be in the right place. Our Instagram Live needs to be there and our webinar needs to be here. Whatever it may be, all the setting needs to be correct. And in order to do that, you're going to have to practice that setting. But we want to make sure that we don't fall into the tragedy of something happens with our setting and it disrupts our entire presentation. It sometimes will even cancel our presentation if we haven't looked at the connectivity that we have or the lighting or something else that can get into our way of actually performing. And then finally, as we come to an end here, use the right technology. There's so many different options and opportunities. If you're pitching and you control the pitch, make sure you're using the right technology according to who's on and what's going to happen. You know, there's so many different things that we can use from audio to video to capabilities of using presentations or green screens or microphones or lighting or whatever it may be. Do your research. Be more interested than interesting. Let technology be a benefit, not a detriment to what you're doing. And so if you can utilize starting in the right way with preparation, preparing yourself with credibility and emotional attachment, being able to articulate a quantitative value, not a subjective Barney purple dinosaur value, but a quantitative value, listing out the reasons with math behind it, the impact with more numbers behind it, and features and benefits to support the capabilities you have in order to answer that call of providing and articulating more value than you're asking for. And utilizing that preparation, not only for the presentation, but also the technology, also the time and the setting of what we're doing. Make sure you use all the different methodologies of ending a sales pitch on the highest note, the highest frequency. And I promise you, the answers that you'll get not only on my TV show, where you can win $50,000 of cash and prizes. So if you're not trying out, I don't know what you're doing. If you want to pitch something, I don't care. Pitch eating broccoli to a great company that needs funding. I don't care. Not only we get the exposure and awareness of Bloomberg and Amazon and all of our networks from the companies involved and the coaches and the judges involved, but moreover, you may win some cash and prizes. So we'd love to have you. David@dmeltzer.com, dmeltzer.com/pitch. All right, put those questions in. I see they're loading up in the Q&A section. Remember, get your exercise, your pitch exercises and guides. My book, I'll sign it, send it to you, ship it for free. David@dmeltzer.com. Join my text community, 949-298-2905, 949-298-2905. All right, let's take some questions here and get this thing going. Where can we tune in to watch 2 Minute Drill tonight? We'll be on Hulu and Amazon. Well, Hulu has Bloomberg TV, so all your cable stations, Hulu, will all have Bloomberg on there. It'll be on Amazon on starting on Monday for 12 weeks. Each episode will be released, the 12 episodes, and then we'll start again in season 2 in June. We'll be filming in March, so try out now. If you want to be a guest judge or a partner in the show, let us know now for season 2. It will be no inventory will be left by the end of January, I promise you. What's the best place to start looking for people you want to learn from? Well, I say look for people who sit in the situation that you want to be in. So whatever they may be, you need to find them where you want to be. So if you want to be a president of a team, if you want to be a lawyer, if you want to be a doctor, then you know where those people are, and you need to find people and ask them for directions in order to get there. And so what we need to be is more curious, more interested. We need to ask people, do you know anyone that can help me? I'm looking for someone that does this, that has done this, that will give us directions in order to get to where that is. What's the most interesting thing you've learned in the first week of 2021? Well, it's been a crazy week, a different kind of week that we haven't seen in 200 years, since 1812, I guess. And so for me, I've really learned about forgiveness and the power and certainty that forgiveness has, that we need to, you know, what do they say? That I have, my biggest fault is I have a need to be offended, right? I have a secondary ego-based consciousness. I have a need to be offended, and I get offended, and then I end up creating void shortages and obstacles, interference to the connectivity I have to everything and everyone. Well, forgiveness resolves that. The word offense, by the way, actually means to bait, right? So I'm baited into allowing something to suck my soul, to suck my energy. And instead of going to resistance and to anger and frustration, let's all go to forgiveness and try to figure out and appreciate what we have and where we have common interest and common bonds. And then let's appreciate the difference. Let's listen to the differences and use forgiveness of ourselves and others in order to give that away. But remember, offense means to bait. Do not be baited into creating void shortages and obstacles and interference in your life. Use forgiveness as a tool for peace and a tool for certainty. Best way to pitch on social media, Instagram specifically. I'm trying to sell art, coloring books, fan art, and commissions. Well, Antonio, the best way to do that is to stimulate interest to get somebody to call you back. So whether it's in person, on the phone, via email, or social media, on Instagram, you want to put something up that stimulates them to get in contact with you so you can articulate the value to exceed what you're asking for. That's the mathematical equation. And so whatever coloring books or commissioned art or samples, testimonials, music, whatever it may be, credible and emotional, to get somebody to reach out to you so that you can explain, meaning articulate, explain the quantitative value that you're asking for and be able to exceed what your value is to what you're asking for. Do we have to pitch live or record? So for 2 Minute Drill, you can record for the tryouts to get to be a finalist. Then once you're a finalist, you have to pitch live. Not live, meaning in person. We do it virtually live, and all of the pitches are virtually live, which then allows you to use your own technology, your own settings, your own preparation, and use that as part of the evaluation as well. And the judges as well will be in studio and some be remote as well. I'm not sure it's related to today's topic, but that's okay. But what book on leadership and money management would you recommend? Thanks, Muriel from Montreal, the one you met in New York City. Oh, hey. Yeah, so I always recommend Sharon Lecter, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Sharon Lecter has a great book. Think and Grow Rich is a great book. The Millionaire Next Door is a great book. There's so many different leadership and money management books. I also tend to lean on the spiritual side of the energy of money, so I got to throw in Power of Intention there by Wayne Dyer. Connected to Goodness isn't bad either. Compassionate Capitalism and Game Time Decision Making. And if anybody wants my books, I'll be happy to send them to you. David@dmelzer.com. Just reach out to me. Happy to send them to you with the exercises guides, the pitch guides, the sales guides, the ego guides, whatever other trainings that you can find on Spotify, Entrepreneur. The playbook is where this is all at. So check out the playbook, share it, like it. You can listen to over 600 episodes with billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, entertainers, and all my trainings. They've made a specific playlist on Spotify, featured on Entrepreneur in every platform. What you have you found to be most effective channels for finding interested clients? Example, cold calling phone numbers found on Google, trying to email through alumni database, or word of mouth recommendations. I have four ways that are most effective, but they all require me to ask one simple question. And that question, first of all, write it down, is do you know anyone that can help me? If you can learn that question, and whenever you meet someone in person, whether you know them or not, and be able to effectuate with a series of questions, not only how you could be of service or value to them, but more importantly, do you know anyone that can help me in person, on the phone, via email? In fact, I still check my sent box every single day to make sure that I am statistically successful in asking for help. Being radically humble and asking, do you know anyone that can help me, on as many emails as I can, whether they are spam emails to me or people I've known forever, I'm asking in that email, do you know anyone that can help me? And then finally, social media and traditional media. Making sure that they have that asked, you know, anyone that could help me, building that network, which now exists in person, on the phone, via email, and traditional and social media. Those are the four ways, as long as you know the series of questions asked, that you can provide value or service to articulate that well, but moreover, too, do you know anyone that could help me? Remember, there are no gatekeepers. There are no gatekeepers. There are only sponsors and power sponsors, people who can help you or know somebody that can help you and can help you themselves. On average, most people know about 1,000 people today. So it's much easier than it was when I was young and we could only get the card group, the golf group, the church group, whoever else we were closest to. I'm starting a student-led design consultancy at Cambridge and want to know if there are any big challenges you have faced in your consultancy work that you foresee may be exacerbated by the fact that we are a student consultancy. Yeah, the biggest one and challenge is to guarantee profitability. So in order to guarantee profitability, it's easy for me to do because of the economic situation that I am and the situational knowledge that I have. Students, on the other hand, don't have the wherewithal or the situational knowledge in order to guarantee value or profit. I have a huge advantage over people that I only work month to month. I mitigate all risk. I don't lock anybody into anything. And I guarantee I'm a profit center. So I qualify everyone by how I can be of service or value, and then determine how I can guarantee a quantitative value, not only articulate to exceed what I'm asking for, but guarantee it. And so that will be the biggest challenge, is communicating or articulating how you can exceed the value that you're asking for as a student in the consultative role, because you have limited situational knowledge and probably limited economic resources, two things that allow the guarantee that seems to be a great way to articulate quantitative value. How to make a pitch memorable? Practice. You know, I think the best way to make a pitch memorable, utilizing, you know, how to start a pitch, make a good pitch, end a pitch, and the pitfalls of a pitch, but in the game, are we ourselves memorable? And that's just, you know, being good, right? Everybody remembers a great performance. Have a great performance. You know, if you can do something or create energy or value that no one else does, they're going to remember you. And remember, you want to be memorable for a good reason, not for a bad reason. So make sure what you want to be remembered is the quantitative value that you articulated and how it exceeded so much what you're asking for. What's your follow-up process after the pitch? So after the pitch, I create a go, no-go plan. I'd be happy to send this exercise to people. It's one of the crucial ways that have made me successful, where I am creating a roadmap, a bite-sized roadmap, to allow someone to work through what it's going to take to stay aligned and to continue to manage expectations and provide value to those people that I've pitched. So I create a go, no go plan after a pitch to make sure that we step by step get to the next step. And if I'm looking for funding, it'll take me through there. If I'm looking for it to be my kids to eat broccoli, it's going to take me there. But if you want that exercise, I'd be happy to send that to you for free, david@dmeltzer.com. If you're in sales, you know, besides being in our private sales group, you need to have the go, no go plan. It's a game changer to manage expectations upfront. Remember, once you get a sale, that's only 20% of the way there. The way that we thrive is to create and manage expectations and develop those expectations. And the way that we do that is through a go, no go plan. And it's very easy, very simple, very easy to template, but I use it every time as a follow-up process. I'm really bad in writing emails and I feel my content is not great. How do I improve on this? Well, first of all, improve on looking within and knowing your own frequency. You know, you can't please everyone. And if your frequency has a vibration that seems to be less inspirational or less educational or less intelligent, it would not matter. Just continue to evolve and learn and articulate your frequency, because there's about 4.4, 4.6 or 5 billion people now utilizing media, traditional and social media. And if we're putting out our own frequency, we'll tend to attract that. I use Dr. Pimple Popper as my classic example of frequency because the majority of the people in the world do not want to watch that stuff. But she has cornered the frequency and is building a market that goes beyond, you know, I would say she's aggregated more viewers on YouTube than all of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And she has a TV show and it's all about popping pimples. You got to be kidding me. But she knows her frequency. So know your frequency, strengthen your signal, learn what spectrum is of people and demographic is at your frequency, and then create a clear message by preparation, by practicing, by being consistent and persistent in posting that frequency. As you build an audience, it will build exponentially, compound itself, and sooner or later, you'll be the most passionate, purposeful, bad writing email and not having such great content person, but with millions and millions of people in your community that you can help because they're at the same frequency. No judgments or conditions put upon bad or good, in my opinion, but it's just yours. So don't compare yourself to other people. Comparison with other people will rob your joy. It will steal your energy. David, thanks for everything you do as always. Given your experience in sports agency space, could you give us insight into pitching in that industry? How does that differ to other areas? What's the biggest lesson you've learned with building a sports agency? Well, the biggest lesson I've learned, first of all, and I'll get into the pitching, is that in order to be a great sports agent, you just need to know two things. How, number one, to sign a client, and two, how to keep them. Those are the only two things that I look for in a sports agent. Can you sign a client and can you keep them? And so in order to pitch, I think number one, who you're pitching is most important because great athletes get pitched all the time. The spheres of influence around them don't. The spheres of influence around them don't usually get treated with the same credibility as the athlete, et cetera. So even when I worked with Lee Steinberg and Warren Moon, it was amazing. So many people would talk all the details of the business with Lee and Warren, and they would blow it because Lee and Warren would come to me and say, hey, can you deal with this guy? And I had a need to be offended, or I already were in a detrimental position because why didn't they talk to me in the first place? But they had to stroke their own ego thinking that somehow Lee and Warren were going to make that decision without talking to the CEO of the company, the one that makes the business decisions, the one that they hired to pay to do that for them. So use the spheres of influence. Know that you're pitching to one, sign a client, and then after that, managing the expectations, utilizing go, no go plan and other things in order to keep the client. You know, it is a very competitive space that everybody wants to sign the greatest athlete. And then once you've signed them, everybody wants to steal them. So you got to know how to sign them and keep them in order to build a sports agency. And we do that through empowering people and working within the context of the spheres of influences, showing the credibility and emotion attached to those spheres of influence so that they're telling the athlete or celebrity or entertainer, you have to go with David Meltzer. You have to work with David Meltzer. David Meltzer is the legend, the GOAT. That's who you need to go with. work within the context of that. How do you build a team around you? Through values. If you want to build a team, it has to be a value-based team. You cannot micromanage your way to the top. You have to teach, in my opinion, gratitude so that everyone has the same perspective, that we're all looking for the superpowers and everything. We're looking for the light, the love, the lessons as a collective consciousness, as a group. Two, forgiveness, as we mentioned earlier, so that we have the peace and certainty in the team that we allow each other to expand, grow, and accelerate. What does that mean? We allow each other to make mistakes. We allow each other to learn and grow. And forgiveness is key to that. And then also accountability. We need to build a team around us by being accountable. It means that some people are liable, right? But there's no blame, shame, and justification. It's all, what did I do to attract myself to this, to myself? And most importantly, what am I supposed to learn from it? When I have team meetings, it's so great. Or if someone makes a mistake, it's so funny because I have to go through six or seven people because they're all telling me they're accountable. No, I'm accountable. Yes, you're all accountable. You all attracted it to yourself and we all want to learn the lesson. So let's get beyond who attracted it to themselves, because it's apparent it's attracted to all of us. Let's get on to the more important issue of what lesson did we learn so that we don't do it again? Or if we do it again, we do it in a better way. Which is an important distinction that people should make. Finally, understanding effective communication in team building, not only communicating with one another, but making sure that we're all communicating with the greatest source of love, light, and lessons, that we're all communicating with the greatest source of power, love, light, and lessons that we're all connected to. We want to not only be motivated, right, to get us up, get us started, get us back up, get us back started, but we want to live inspired as a team, in spirit, where people are connected to something much bigger than themselves, a purpose, a passion, and a profitability that far exceeds anything, so that they can make more money to help more people and have more fun. If you can build a team based on your values, mine are gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and effective communication or inspiration, you will continue to accelerate and grow, and exponentially, you will grow utilizing compound interest. Just like Einstein said, the variable in the rule of 72 will allow you to keep on growing and helping more and more people until we create a huge collective consciousness of abundance, which will be, by the way, the next week's training, abundant negotiation, working from a place of more than enough to negotiate instead of just enough or not enough. Next question. Do you ever lose your place in a pitch? How to get back on track afterwards? Yes, I've lost my place in a pitch, in an interview, in a speech. There's two ways. One, first, try to refocus back to where you were. And if you can't, immediately illuminate that you lost your train of thought. There's plenty of content out there where I'm like, oh my gosh, what was I talking about? I think people will appreciate the human aspect, the vulnerability that you have if you start at a place where you were, or moreover, just illuminate that you've lost your train of thought. And therefore, you can either ask them where you're at, if it was an interactive pitch, or just illuminate that you have gotten lost and you're going to start here because you can't remember where you were. So you're just going to start back to where you were. So make sure that you're vulnerable in that way and you will be fine. Do a John Lovitz impersonation. I think me talking is a John Lovitz impersonation. And if I look too much like John Lovitz, that means I've gained too much weight. I'm going to go for a jog after this. Yeah, that's the ticket. there's no crying. All right. Anyway, I love John Lovitz. I got to get him on my podcast. Don't you think it'd be funny? John Lovitz and I on the playbook together. We had Dan Aykroyd, had Cameron Diaz. We can have John Lovitz. Not a problem. Any sports prediction for 2021? Yeah, let me just start with one. My biggest sports prediction is going to happen on my birthday, January 11th, Monday, when we launch 2-Minute Drill on Amazon. It's a big day for me, but it's my biggest sports prediction for 2021. And that's Ohio State Buckeyes are going to upset, as a 7.5-point underdog, the Alabama. That's right, the Buckeyes. No, I'm sorry to tell you, Buckeyes will be the national champion. Justin Fields will show you what he's made of. And so I'm sorry, Alabama fans out there. It is the Buckeyes year. Thumbs up for Ohio. Here we go. OHIO. Great question, by the way. What are some of the other things beyond monetary return on investment are investors looking to get out of someone they invest in? Well, first of all, they're looking to invest in that person. So they may not see a quantitative value, but they see someone that's going to get it done, right? They see someone, I look for that all the time. The common denominator of someone I'm going to invest in is the desire that they must be what they can be. Because the one thing, regardless of how great a business is, you got to have a no quit attitude. You have to have a try me attitude, not a why me attitude. You have to have a desire to must be what you can be in order to be a great entrepreneur, in order to make it happen. No matter how great the idea is, the innovation is, the IP is, the business is, or how much revenue you have today, trust me, there's nothing more challenging and changing and growing and learning than being an entrepreneur and being a CEO of that company or a leader of that company. And if you don't have that backbone, that desire to be what you must be, it's not going to happen. So that's what they're looking for, the desire that you must be what you can be. Is the approach of making a pitch in our personal lives, i.e. asking someone on a date, different from business? Only in the respect that we're not quite in a business, we use quantitative value, meaning money and resources and time. I think it's much more on the credibility and emotional side of things. You don't have to go through quantitatively reasons, impacts, and capabilities. So that part's different compared to taking a girl or a guy out on a date. But definitely credibility and emotional attachment are critical and are identical. But the difference in the business aspect is you don't need the reasons, impacts, and capabilities analysis. You're more would stay focused in on credibility, vulnerability, humility, and emotional attachment, lessons and stories, all the same pitfalls, preparedness, nerves, you know, all those things we were talking about, clock, but not reasons, impacts, and capabilities. You don't have to have quantitative value to exceed what you're asking for. You just have to have an emotional connection and be credible. And I think you'll do really well. I feel the battle I face is in my headspace between my ears. Yes, everyone is. You can't find outside of you what you can't find inside. How do you feel about facing and clearing out versus avoiding and pushing away the thoughts? I feel that no matter how hard I try to stop, drop, and roll, sort of speak, it continues to haunt me as if I'm constantly running from myself, holding myself back and truly moving forward. Is it easier to serve others than deal with myself? Thoughts. Well, first of all, yes, a lot of people help other people so they don't have to fix themselves. Two, if you have a reoccurring issue, then you have an energetic or a quantum issue. It's beyond your conscious and your subconscious. You can cancel out or use stop, drop, and roll at a conscious level to change your behavior. You can use stop, drop, and roll to clear your mind of subconscious beliefs that you may have that have created habits or neural pathways that have you acting in a certain way. But it takes a longer period of time to shift your energy. Things that have quantumly been, you know, handed down to you for generations and generations, or even lifetimes and lifetimes. And you need to understand and blend your persistent behavior with the patience that it takes maybe lifetimes in order to effectuate something that's within your DNA, the quantum level of your DNA. You can continue to work on it by activating the epigenetic layer of your DNA to activate it by having the exact same consistent, persistent behavior in the pursuit of shifting that energy. In Connected to Goodness, I have a process called Cancel, Clear, Connect. I'd be happy to send that to you. I can also send the exercise, david@dmeltzer.com. Everybody should learn not only stop, drop, and roll, but cancel, clear, connect in order to shift your energy. Just because you think, say, do, and believe something, that doesn't mean energetically it's aligned. Ed Milet and I in our interview talked about this internal thermostat and the alignment that we have that we're unconsciously competent of, that we're not aware of consciously or subconsciously. And that can be effectuated. And therefore, look within, look to change the conscious and subconscious, and be patient about activating what you want unconsciously in your personality traits, your characteristics, your obsessions, your addictions, and shift that energy. Email me, I'll buy the book for you. I'll send it to you. Just give me david@dmeltzer.com or text me at 949-298-2905. I'll send you the exercises, guides, and books for free. No problem. Do you ever, and I'll pay for shipping, by the way. So if you want a hard copy, you want it signed, not a problem. You know, not trying to make money off of shipping. I'll send that to you and pay for shipping. Did you ever get nervous when making a big or important ask? Yeah. Yes, I still get nervous every once in a while. And it's either because one, I'm not prepared. Two, there's not a clock. Or three, I've given some separation to who I'm asking, meaning I've elevated them as inferior or superior to me. And I've also given conditions of big or little or important or not to it. And I've made myself nervous. For minutes and moments now, it used to be a lot more. And I've practiced ending fear. And also practice preparing myself so I'm not nervous. But yes, I still get nervous just for less time. What is your favorite actor? Should I say John Lovitz? wow. I don't know, Morgan Freeman. I was blessed to be on a stage with Morgan Freeman, and he's just incredible. I think it was funny because like Seth Rogen, McConaughey, myself, Gina Rodriguez, all were there for the Variety magazine. I won the Sports Humanitarian Award with those guys. I was the only unknown comic, I guess. But Morgan Freeman was a hero of all of ours, and just an incredible actor in a variety of different roles, obviously, including Shawshank Redemption, which is one of my favorite movies, if not my favorite movie. What would you put in an email pitch when someone requested that? I would put in only enough to get them to go to the next step or to call me back or to email me back. So I would put enough in there to stimulate interest and transition that interest so that they call me back or email me back. That's all I would put in. I would not try to engineer a vision or value beyond one thing, getting them to call me back or email me back. That's all I ask for. So I'd keep it very narrow, very clear, and very statistically successful in what we do. Remember, if we can get people to get back to us, we have an 80% advantage because 80% of the people we can't get in touch with. And of that, most people will never get back to you. And if you become an expert at getting those people to get back to you, you have increased your statistical success up to 80%. And it's an incredible advantage over everybody else, obviously. Good afternoon, Dave. How do I monetize and assess the value of my digital magazine? Well, once again, you have to do a reasons, impacts, and capability analysis. So to monetize that, you need to show the value of how much time it'll save you, how many connections it'll give you, what money it will make you from the ideas that are in the magazine. There's just a variety of things in the reasons that people should read that digital magazine, what impact it could have on my life. And as you know, the features and benefits of the magazine have to support the capabilities of the magazine, the distribution of the magazine, the demographic of the magazine. All of these different things are quite easy to monetize. So focus in on those reasons, impacts, and capabilities. Send anyone you want a reasons, impact, and capability, a pitch guide, david@dmeltzer.com. Just reach out. I have a whole book exercises that I can send to you on that. Is creating an emotional connection or establishing credibility more important? People buy on emotion for logical reasons. So I tend to feel as if you don't have an emotional connection, it's very hard to establish credibility. Now, it's very important to establish the credibility after you have an emotional connection, because if you establish insecurity, you're going to create a person who's seeking void shortages and obstacles, and that's what they're going to find. So I do lean towards the emotional connection. All right. Anyone that didn't get the question, email me, david@dmeltzer.com. We are at high noon tonight. Join me 8:30 Pacific time. You got to check it out. 2 Minute Drill on Bloomberg TV. On Monday, it'll release on Amazon Prime Video. 12 episodes, 12 weeks of fun, $50,000 of cash and prizes on every episode. Get great feedback, great advice from all of the great judges. We had so much fun doing it. It's great value. It will exceed your expectations, I promise you. Thank you so much. Next week's training is on negotiations, abundantly negotiating. You can email me for all the books, guides, exercises that I mentioned or ones that I didn't, david@dmeltzer.com. You can watch the replays on Spotify, Entrepreneur, and every platform. The Playbook, like it, share it. The Playbook, it has its own separate playlist on Spotify, featured on Entrepreneur and every platform. Get my books, guides, exercises, and please join me. Watch 2 Minute Drill. You're going to love it. But most importantly, everyone, you can join my text community, 949-298-2905. You can email me, david@dmeltzer.com. But most importantly, be kind to your future self and do good deeds. Have a great week. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you like. My only ask is you help me empower others to be happy.